/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Hundreds of thousands of people took to the streets across Yemen, waving flags and holding banners to honor the martyred resistance leaders assassinated by Israel over the past year. They vowed to carry forward the legacy of the fallen leaders and pledged to deliver a historic defeat to Israel.
The resistance is unyielding. Each day it achieves new victories. Right now, coordination across the region is strengthening as factions work together to end the Israeli regime once and for all.
The protesters also lashed out at some Arab leaders, condemning their complicity with Israel against the Palestinians and Lebanese people.
Not only are some regimes failing to support Gaza, but some Arab rulers are aiding Israel. This is a tragic reality. By Allah, the Yemeni people will press on to liberate Al-Aqsa, no matter how long their aggression continues.
Despite repeated warnings from the U.S. and Israel urging Yemen to stay out of the war on Gaza, Yemen has continued to impose a blockade on all Israeli-linked ships sailing in the Red Sea. In a bold show of defiance, the Yemeni army has also launched hypersonic missiles targeting various military sites inside occupied Palestine. In response, both Israel and the U.S. have conducted attacks on Yemen, hoping to force Ansar Allah movement to end their military support for Palestine. Their warnings and threats, however, have not deterred the Yemenis.
Israel threatens to attack us and target the Mujahideen in Yemen, but we tell them we have been through this before for 10 years straight. These threats won't stop us from supporting Lebanon and Gaza.
Today's nationwide demonstrations in Yemen reflect a rising call for action and solidarity throughout the Arab and Islamic world as people unite in support of Palestine and the armed resistance to halt what they see as a genocide unfolding against the Palestinians by Israel.
Yemen has already shown support for the people of Palestine and Lebanon by launching attacks on Israeli positions. The country now says 400,000 Yemeni troops are prepared for direct confrontation with Israel as the regime continues its aggression against innocent civilians. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
A massive march began in front of Al Husseini Mosque in downtown Amman after Friday prayers, with widespread participation. Protesters condemned the ongoing starvation and genocide in Gaza. They also denounced the recent siege and massacres in Jabalia north of the Strip. Protesters called on Amman to end all treaties with the regime.
It is time to end the Wadi Araba Treaty and cut all ties with Israel, starting with Wadi Araba and subsequent agreements, including the gas deal. Our demand today is clear. Terminate all agreements with the regime, especially in the light of recent Israeli threats against the region.
The march was organized by the Islamic Movement and the National Forum for Supporting Resistance and Protecting the Homeland. Protesters were gathered under the slogan, "Stop the Jabalia Genocide, Cancel the Wadi Araba Treaty."
The international community has demonstrated the failure of the international law. Israel does not respect the power of law, but only the law of power. There must be decisive intervention to halt these massacres, and all international institutions must act to compel this enemy to stop.
We are ashamed as tanks attack hospitals in Jabalia, killing patients and tormenting the wounded. Across Gaza, in Jabalia, Rafah, the north and south, and in Lebanon, homes are destroyed, and mosques and hospitals lie in ruins. with no one intervening to stop the Israeli atrocities.
Protesters demanded decisive action against the brutal crimes committed against civilians in Gaza, urging nations worldwide to take a strong and clear stance against these violations and to support the resilience of the resistance. Protesters demand an end to Israeli atrocities and the cancellation of the Jordanian and Israeli peace treaty. Zayed Agarbe, Amman.
Waving the flags of Hezbollah and Palestine alongside the flag of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Iranians have participated in a commemoration ceremony in the capital, Tehran, this time to honor martyr Sayyid Hashem Safieddine, who was assassinated in an Israeli attack on Beirut.
Martyr Safieddine was a steadfast fighter on the resistance front, never wavering in his commitment. Although many resistance leaders have made the ultimate sacrifice, there are still others ready to carry on the struggle and ensure the resistance prevails.
We gather here to honor the martyrs of the resistance front and to reaffirm our commitment to carry on their legacy. They are true legends.
Sheikh Safieddine, a cousin of the martyred Hezbollah leader Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, had been a member of Hezbollah since his founding in 1982. Alongside Nasrallah, he traveled to the holy city of Qom in Iran to pursue religious studies, remaining there until his return in 1984. During his time in Qom, he was deeply influenced by the political ideology of Imam Khomeini, the late founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran. In 1994, Safieddine became the head of Hezbollah's executive council. Since the onset of the Israeli aggression in the Gaza Strip, he had repeatedly voiced support for operations aimed at pressuring the Israeli regime to end its atrocities.
In the end, Sayyid Hashem Safieddine was martyred in the noble struggle against oppression. We will all continue his legacy, eagerly awaiting the final victory of the resistance front.
The noble cause of the resistance is deeply rooted in the younger generation, who played a prominent role in the ceremony, proudly holding resistance flags and displaying images of its leaders.
As a teenager, I want to emphasize that we recognize these martyred leaders, fought against oppression and Israeli atrocities. We are committed to following their path and will continue to fight until justice is achieved.
The unwavering support of the Iranian people for the resistance, along with their tributes to its martyrs, send a clear message: unity and strength within the resistance front. Farzan Ashurian, Tehran.
South Korea's Daegu this week hosts the Future Innovation Expo, notable for featuring drone technology being applied in current conflicts. The expo has, however, drawn sharp criticism for hosting Israel, which is using such technologies to conduct genocide of Palestinians in Gaza.
It's absurd that Israel's participating in this event, despite the widespread condemnation here and around the world for Israel's inhumane attacks. We condemn Israel for committing genocide and condemn the Yoon Suk-yeol government and Daegu City for hosting Israeli companies here.
Seoul has seen large weekly demonstrations of support for Palestine in the face of Israel's genocide in Gaza and sought to strengthen the BDS movement to boycott, divest, and sanction organizations cooperating with Israel's apartheid regime. The participation of Israeli companies in this exhibition demonstrates the hypocrisy of South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol's government. South Korea voted for full UN membership for Palestine and rhetorically supports a ceasefire, while in actuality it backs Israel, maintaining trade and even weapons exports that fund and supply genocide.
Meanwhile, at South Korea's National Assembly, 41 lawmakers this month tabled a bill calling for a ceasefire and supporting the UN General Assembly vote, demanding Israel end its occupation of Palestinian territory within 12 months.
Israel. Not only the United States, but also South Korea and the international community should work together to ensure that the UN resolution is observed in Palestine and to stop Israel's reckless plan to ignore it. We should focus on resolving the humanitarian crisis in the Gaza Strip, civilians being massacred, and the fact that humanitarian supplies are virtually blocked.
Concern is also mounting around the world over Israel's expansion of its war to Lebanon and other countries in the region. Frank Smith, Seoul.
In Washington, D.C., the NGO Doctors Against Genocide held a conference to continue publicizing the voices of healthcare professionals against the genocide they've witnessed in Gaza. Forced famine, bombed hospitals, untreated disease, medicine shortages, garbage which hasn't been picked up for a year, mass homelessness, deprivation, grief, indescribable and ceaseless psychological trauma. The realities and statistics are shocking, but they're not as shocking as the personal stories.
Actually, today I spoke with a friend that I made there, and she's finally pregnant after trying for 4 years, finally got pregnant, and today was texting me that she just wishes death upon herself. Like, this is supposed to be the happiest time of her life, and she wants to die because it's so bad. She said they've reached the point of famine. She was like, we've not gotten food for like 10 days. We're eating molded bread with bugs all over it. And she said there's some canned food that's disgusting, but they're eating it because they have no other option. But she, like I said, she's pregnant. This should be the happiest moment of her life. And she's wishing death upon herself at this point.
Returning doctors and nurses said the barbaric cruelty which Israel is inflicting on Gazans compelled them to speak out. Their testimonies make it crystal clear that Israel is sadistically torturing Gazans, and that if the West applied pressure on Tel Aviv, the horrors could stop immediately.
So I've been in Aleppo, I've been in Haiti, I've been on a whole bunch of places where you couldn't get aid. This is the first time the aid is there and not accessible. So I could solve the nutrition problem in 6 months if we just opened the gate. It's right there. It's right there. I could throw a rock and hit it. You see thousands of trucks as you're coming in. So the aid is available in the region, it's just not accessible because the IDF is in control of the borders from north to south. So the aid is being hindered in any quantity at all.
Western leaders routinely deny the official counts of nearly 45,000 Gazans killed and over 100,000 injured. But scientists know this number is a drastic undercount. The top medical journal, The Lancet, recently estimated that the actual death toll is about 5 times the official number.
War has health implications beyond just direct harm. And in Gaza, the death toll is expected to be much higher than in a normal conflict. That's because of the widespread destruction of its infrastructure and the shortages and famine imposed by Israel.
Even if the war ended today, past bereavements will continue to impact individuals until at least 2070, researchers estimate, but the trauma caused by even a normal war exists in a community's collective memory for generations. Ramin Mazahiri, Washington, D.C.
Several prominent Iranian figures have paid a visit to the Hamas bureau in Tehran to express their condolences for the martyrdom of the resistance group's leader, Yahya Sinwar. Among them were the Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian and the commander of the Quds Force of Iran's IRGC, Brigadier General Ismail Qaani. The high-ranking officials remember Sinwar for the lasting impact he has left on the resistance.
When you look at the way he lived. He lived as a hero, and he died as a legend. So that has left an imprint in the minds of every human being. So that's why the martyrdom of Yahya Sinwar was a great, I think, asset for the resistance, because that will bring the resistance into more resilience.
Sinwar's legacy as a resistance leader was forged not only in battle, but also during his long imprisonment in Israeli jails, where he endured years of suffering. His leadership, shaped by personal sacrifice, became a symbol of defiance for Palestinians. To many, he embodied the resilience of the Palestinian struggle.
Unfortunately, the very governments and powers that preach human rights, democracy, humanity, and international law are the ones violating all of these principles they claim to uphold. They support a regime that has forcibly expelled people from their homes and displaced them. When these people seek to reclaim their rights and land, the U.S. and European countries arm Israel to the teeth, enabling every inhumane crime. Shockingly, They defend these actions with brazen pride.
Western nations often call for de-escalation in conflicts, yet their continued financial and military support for Israeli actions, including targeted assassinations, only fuels further unrest. Their rhetoric of peace contrasts starkly with their actions on the ground.
The Israeli regime is finished. This is because its treasury is empty, and the U.S. has begun pouring money into it. Its ammunition has run out, so they've brought in U.S. supplies to refill their stockpiles. On the front lines, its strength depleted, and their missile defense systems have proven ineffective. At this point, the resistance is at war with both the U.S. and the U.K. The remnants of the Israeli army are kept afloat only with the help of these powers.
The growing weakness of Israel's military and economic standing signals a critical shift in the region. With Sinwar's legacy of resistance deeply rooted in this struggle, those gathered in his memory are determined to continue along the same path. Martyr Yahya Sinwar is mostly remembered for his leadership skills and unwavering commitment to the Palestinian cause. Now people who came here say it is his legacy that continues to fuel and inspire those following in his path and pave the way to the ultimate victory. Ali Ramazani, Tehran.
A charity event known as the Golden Jihad was organized by the Iranian people in the capital Tehran to donate their treasured gold coins and jewelry in support of their brothers and sisters in Lebanon. This gesture of solidarity follows intensified Israeli attacks on civilians and resistential areas in Lebanon. Iranians expressed greater resolve to contribute in the donation after Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, leader of the Islamic Revolution, called for aid to the Lebanese people.
After our leaders ordered us to aid the Lebanese people, we decided to participate in the donation. We consider it our religious duty to help the oppressed people of Lebanon and Gaza and to support the resistance front. We also want our children to become familiar with the noble path of resistance.
Our message to the oppressed people of Gaza and Lebanon is that we know how much they are suffering, as we have also experienced war. During the 8 years of war with Iraq, we also suffered. We want to be a part of this massive donation process that is underway in Iran.
Children also played a significant role in the event, offering their cherished belongings for the noble cause with small hands but big hearts.
I know that the people of Gaza and Lebanon need this help. My message to the Israeli regime is that you are nothing, and you can do nothing while confronting the resistance.
When it comes to humanity, no freedom-seeking person can remain silent. These acts of solidarity and fundraising are powerful reminders of the importance of supporting the oppressed, regardless of one's faith.
What we do is our duty as human beings, not just because we are Muslims. I believe that now it's everyone's dream around the world to see the annihilation of the Zionist regime.
Once again, Iranians demonstrate their unwavering solidarity with the people of Lebanon and Gaza through this fundraiser and donation drive. Their support extends beyond financial aid, serving as a powerful testament to the unity and strength within the resistance front. Farzan Ashourian, Tehran.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Imam Khamenei, the leader of Islamic Revolution, led the Friday prayer on October 4, 2024, in the Imam Khomeini Musalla, following the martyrdom of the Mujahid on the path of God, martyr Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah, and on the eve of the first anniversary of the epic Operation Al-Aqsa Flood. This is the Imam Khamenei's second sermon in Tehran's Friday prayer. The audience I'm addressing in this Friday prayer sermon is the entire Islamic world, in particular the dear nations of Lebanon and Palestine. We are all grieving and mourning the martyrdom of our dear Sayyid. This is a significant loss and it has truly caused us to mourn. Of course, our mourning does not mean being depressed, distressed, or losing hope. It is of the same nature as mourning for the master of the martyrs, Hussein ibn Ali, peace be upon him. It is reviving, edifying, inspiring, and bring hope. Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah is no longer among us physically, but his true self, his spirit, his path, and his resonant voice are and will continue to be with us. He was the highly raised flag of the resistance in the face of the tyrannical, plundering devils. He was the articulate voice and the brave supporter of the oppressed. He brought assurance and courage to the fighters and seekers of truth.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Martyr Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah, the scope of his popularity and influence extended beyond Lebanon, Iran, and the Arab countries, and now his martyrdom will increase his influence even more. His most important message in words and actions during his lifetime to you, the devoted people of Lebanon, was to not despair or become distraught over the loss of prominent figures such as Imam Musa Sadr, Sayyid Abbas Musavi, and others, to not doubt about your struggle, to increase your efforts and your capabilities, to doubt your solidarity, to stand up to the aggressive, intrusive enemy, and to defeat them by strengthening your faith and putting your trust in God. My dear people, the devoted Lebanese nation, the exuberant youth of Hezbollah and Amal, my children, this is what our martyred Sayyid wants today from his people, the resistance front, and the entire Islamic Ummah. Since the evil, abject enemy is unable to inflict serious harm on the solid Hezbollah organization, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, and other organizations that fight on the path of God, it considers terrorism, destruction, bombardment, the killing of civilians, and bringing grief to unarmed people to be a sign of its victory. What is the consequence of this? The consequence of this behavior is an increase in the anger and motivation of the people.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio.
Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The Israeli regime has conducted an illegal attack against the Islamic Republic after about 3 weeks of Israeli regime officials claiming this will be such a severe attack that Iran won't know what has hit it. The opposite has occurred, an attack that was way below the severity of what anyone imagined, pale in comparison to Iran's operation to Promise 1 and 2. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at how this operation had one winner, not the Israeli regime, but Iran's defense shield. And as things stand, Iran has said that there are no limits to its determination to defend itself. Let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Masoud Shajar, chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, joins us from London. Also joining us, Hossein Al-Bukhaiti, who is an activist and political commentator, who joins us from Sana'a. Welcome to you both. I'll start with you, Masoud Shajar. You have this regime, the Israeli regime, conducting an illegal attack against the Islamic Republic. It calls it Operation Days of Repentance. Putting the illegality aside, you have, based on some reports, Israeli officials who were in bunkers giving orders. And you had the majority of Iranians who went to their balconies to see if there was anything happening, if they could see anything. There's a contrast there. And this really points to the less than severe operation that took place. Why did this operation fall so short of the Israeli rhetoric before it happened?
Well, really, I can't stop laughing when I think about it and what we witnessed last night. And, you know, vis-a-vis being illegal, what has this Zionist state has done that has been legal since its own creation? It's been involved in illegality, in sort of killing children, men, women, committing genocide, illegal occupation, you name it, they've done it, assassinations, and the list goes on and on. But, you know, at this 11th hour, it really is it's a joke. I mean, I can't stop laughing of all the jokes that is coming out of Iran since last night, you know, a bunch of kids on the rooftop, you know, sort of looking and trying to find a single Israeli rocket or attack, and it goes on and on and on. And even in this illegal entities, illegal occupying areas, people are joking about their own sort of so-called government and how pathetic this has been. I think what we need to really recognize here, and I think is very important, is that, you know, like any bully, that the bully in the school grounds, once it's exposed, once his power is being challenged, then, you know, the whole thing falls to pieces. And this is what we are seeing. This Zionist state have been bullying and taking sort of illegal action against the people in Gaza. You know, we need to recognize what Gaza was. Gaza was a big prison, and they have unleashed a sort of an armed forces against people in a sort of concentration camp, and they think they could get away with the same sort of bullying elsewhere, and now they've been challenged, I think, for first time in their lifetime. Indeed. They've been challenged, and they are facing, they're losing all credibility whatsoever.
Well, Hossein Abu-Ghaiti, it doesn't take a specialist to understand what has happened when you put the videos next to each other. The Israeli illegal attack on the Islamic Republic and Operation True Promise the Second. You don't need to be a military analyst to see the severity and the successful operation that Operation True Promise was compared to the Israeli regime. I mean, when you had the Israeli Minister of Military Affairs saying the strike on Iran will make the world understand Israel's might, they will understand in Israel and elsewhere what your preparations have included in statements to the IOF regime forces, and Iran won't know what hit it. It falls pale. It doesn't even measure up to that. Do you think that that means that the Israeli regime was afraid of what type of retaliation then would entail?
This of course, clearly, that the Israeli regime was afraid to conduct a major attack, as they were warning that they will, as an example, targeted the Iranian oil infrastructure or nuclear facility. And at the end, what happened after the attack of 1 October from the Islamic Republic of Iran against the Zionist State of Israel, millions of Israeli settlers across occupied Palestine has went to shelters. But meanwhile, we've seen that this attack that was conducted against Iran by Israeli, we've seen that millions of Iranian people has gone to the street, to the roof, to see where that attack was hitting. It was, of course, a limited attack. And what Israeli actually want from this attack is not actually to damage any Iranian infrastructure, because they know what would be the retaliation of the Iranian army and the Iranian government. They just want to show that they can actually retaliate. They can actually send their fighter jet to attack Iran. But I believe that even though this attack was limited and the damage was actually, it's something that you can't actually mention. Even though two Iranian soldiers, as it been reported, were killed, I believe that this attack actually is still a violation of Iranian sovereignty. And I believe that Iran will retaliate to this attack, because the attack of 1 October against the Zionist State of Israel, it was a retaliation against the assassination of Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh. So it was the Israeli regime who began the attack against Iran by targeting their consulate in Damascus, and then targeting Ismail Haniyeh. That's why I believe that the Iranian government and the Iranian army will actually retaliate against this attack, because they should not actually let Netanyahu at least to show that he is actually one, if it was through the media and through what they are saying, that the Iran might not respond, and the United States and all their media is kind of requesting the Iranian not to respond. This means that it's not about the damage. It was only that Netanyahu want to show that he can actually target Iran.
All right. Well, there's a winner that has come out of this, Ambassador Shajar. I don't know if you agree or not. And that's not the Israeli regime, but is Iran's missile defense shield that was able to thwart and intercept the incoming missiles. That was very evidence based on the skyline. Tell us what you think about that, because that obviously shows another area where it was not very well known, based on at least what we know of how the enemy, in this case the Israeli regime, would have anticipated, again, based on the success rate that we see here, and also that this type of defense approach and success that the defense shield had adds to the other assets that Iran's defense, doctrine and military equipment have.
Absolutely. I mean, it's short of miracle. You know, when you really look at where Iran was at the time of revolution, when the imposed war was taking place, and Iran couldn't buy barbed wire to defend itself and its soldiers and its citizens, and now it is what it is, and what we saw, all of us, last night. But I want to add one thing more. This is not just facing state of Zionist state. Iran has been standing against the whole of the West. Zionist state itself is not really that powerful, despite all that is being sort of we hear on our Western media. The reality is that who is behind it? United States, Western leaders, not the Western people. You know, 85-75% of people in the West are against this war. They want it to end. But their government, which is represents 15% of the people in the West, or 20%, is supporting in every possible way. Israel could not survive more than a few hours if it wasn't because of the support of the West. And what is important for us to remember right now is that it's not just Israel is scared. It's actually United States of America, with all its allies, is too scared to sort of challenge and allow its poodle to go beyond what they were, what they did the other night. So I think that's something we need to keep into account, that the fear is not just Zionist state, but their masters as well. But also, I think what we need to also recognize is that this is, as much as it's the right, legitimate, inherible right of Iran to defend itself and to sort of respond to this, but I think it goes one step further, and this is very important. Israel is not just danger to the Iranian people. Israel is danger to humanity. Israel, by legitimizing genocide as a means and trying to actually create a future, which normalization of genocide as a tool of killing this sort of number of people, which in reality is lot more than 40,000, that is actually what needs to be challenged on top of their aggression against Iran.
All right, I'm going to come back to you with the point that you just made, but in a different way, and see what you think about it. But I'd like to ask Hossein Abouqaiti about some of the fake news that's out there that's peddled by the Israeli regime itself, and also by some Western media outlets. You're looking at things like Israel hitting 20 targets, 100 fighter jets were involved, Iran's oil refinery to have been hit, and significant damage to Iran's surface-to-surface missile production centers. And in one particular case, they even showed a picture of this area that I'm familiar with as a person, a resident of Iran, of which they showed this storage facility in an industrial park that is not made for missiles or drones. And they targeted that, and they showed that picture. Do you think that Israel was trying to magnify the attack in order to show the weakness of what was involved in the actual attack?
I mean, of course, this is actually what's happening. Israeli, through their statement and through the media, and as well media in some Arab nation who are actually loyal to the Zionist state of Israel and Western media, they will try hard to magnify it and to make this attack look, so big. But if we see on the ground, Iran, Iranian air defense was successfully determined and have stopped most of this attack. And if we actually see and compare Iran and as well the Zionist state of Israel, we know that the Zionist state of Israel depend 100% on all its military equipment and weapons on the United States. And even I believe that this attack that was conducted against Iran, even it was limited, it was as well supported by the United States. We've seen that the Israeli regime has failed actually to stop Hamas from continue targeting Israel and as well from continue fighting back, and as well Hezbollah. And we know and we see that the United States and other countries and as well Israel blame Iran for supporting those two groups. So just imagine if Iran will come to a direct war with Israel. If Israel failed to stop Hamas and Hezbollah, how can it actually be successful to stop Iran in any attack or in any war in the future? That's why what the Israeli regime have now is just to use the media to exaggerate this attack and to use. I mean, what the Israeli actually, what they are successful in all their attack in the region, they are successful in killing civilians. We've seen that in Lebanon, in as well in Gaza, and as well against Yemen. I mean, they couldn't target any military installation in Yemen. They have targeted the port and some oil infrastructure and power station in Hodeidah. This shows that the only thing they're good at is by killing civilians and destroying, as they did in Gaza. But I still believe that even though this attack was limited, that Israeli now will actually will be concerned about what type of attack Iran will conduct against Israel, because the one who has actually started the attack against the Islamic Republic of Iran is the Zionist State of Israel. They are the one who have started the war. It's an illegal occupation. It's an illegal attack against Iran. That's why I believe that this attack that was conducted by Israeli regime is just for the media use and just to save Benjamin Netanyahu, especially after the attack of 1 October that have actually hit the Israeli regime very hard in many parts in occupied Palestine.
Well, if there was a time where the Israeli regime would think that it could just walk away now from what is a failed operation, though they perceive it to be a success, this is that time. And I told you that I would come back to you, Masoud Shajara, with the point that you made regarding how Israel is a threat to the world. But my question to you is, isn't Israel a threat to itself? In the context where you have an attack that was unsuccessful, despite the promises, the grand promises that were made by the Minister of Military Affairs, by different Israeli officials, where even now within Israel, Israeli officials, like the opposition leader Yair Lapid, saying that this was nowhere close to what Israel should have done, therefore deeming this to be unsuccessful, meaning that it now has put Israel on the back foot. It has exposed itself, that it is vulnerable. And when you have a regime that's dealing on seven fronts, as they claim that they are, which they are in essence, how weak does that pose Israel footing to be, given now this unsuccessful operation?
Well, we have all seen that Zionist state is morally bankrupt. And it has shown itself. And indeed, this is why even in the West, let alone the rest of the world, 75-80% and the rest of the world, 90-95% of people are against it, have turned against it. Now we are seeing, as you are rightly saying, that the Israelis, who themselves, overwhelming majority of them, are morally bankrupt and they are motivated by hatred rather than anything else, are not turning against their own sort of infrastructure and their own leadership, because they're seeing that now they're also, on top of being morally bankrupt, they're militarily incompetent. I mean, really what happened last night shows the incompetence of this so-called huge or one of the largest military force in the world, and their incompetence in planning and even implementing it. I mean, you know, they are usually very good because they control the Western media. But what we have seen all day today is sort of mockery of their incompetence, their sort of failures in operation last night, and the cowardness. And this is something that Israeli and this Zionist state citizens are seeing it and being exposed to it first time. And so on one side, from outside, I think they lost all credibility. But inside, internally, they are they lost credibility also, and I think they are going to find it very difficult to come out of this unaffected.
Indeed. Well, you know, regionally, Hossein Abu Qiti, you have all countries without exception that have blasted the Israeli regime to have conducted this illegal strike on the Islamic Republic. Even allies of Israel, countries like Jordan, that have come out and said, you know, what Israel did was wrong. It appears especially after the many trips that Iran's foreign minister made to the regional countries, that none of the countries allowed Israel to use this airspace, except for Iraq, which did not allow Israel to use the airspace because of an agreement that there exists between the two, that they were unaware that the U.S. would use this area, which is, from what we understand, 100 or so kilometers from the Islamic Republic. Isn't this the time that all these regional countries, realizing that the U.S., which backs Israel, cannot take care of them or their security, that it stands to stand up to the U.S. to stop its support for the Israeli regime and to stop the destructive policies as a result of the regime by backing it?
I mean, this is exactly what's happening since October 7. The status of the United States in the region has been damaged really badly. And we've seen, as you mentioned, that many condemnation of countries, even though countries that are actually loyal to the United States and Israel or have some ties, as we say, under the table with Israel, like Saudi Arabia or as well Jordan, who have a clear ties with the Israeli, they have all condemned their attack, and some of them have said that they didn't allow the Israeli regime to use their airspace. And this is actually something new that has not happened before October 7. As an example, that the United States, we know when they launched the war with the United Kingdom as the so-called prosperity guardian against Yemen, they couldn't actually use any airspace in the region, even though some of the largest bases they have is in Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Bahrain. But they were not allowed to use that because they know that the Yemenis actually have threatened and they will target those countries. They will target the U.S. Asset in those countries, and as well they will target, when they have war, they will target even the oil infrastructure and all type of infrastructure in this region. This actually has banned or not allowed those countries to join or to allow United States. This is exactly what's happening with Iran, especially after the attack of 1st of October against the Zionist State of Israel. It shows clearly to all the region and to all the nation in our region, in the Middle East, that Iran actually is capable to target and to hurt the Israeli regime. And it was clearly that Israeli air defense has failed miserably in stopping those attacks. That's why since October 7, I believe that now who have the upper hand is the axis of resistance. And I believe that the Israeli regime, with the leadership of Netanyahu, actually they are the one who will actually hurt the Israeli regime, will destroy the Israeli regime.
Okay. We're quickly running out of time. I guess this is going to be the last question to you, Master Shajara. You know, we have now seen the reactions come through from Iran, and the most recent one actually indicates that Iran reserves the right, obviously, to retaliate. It's within its rights. It's within its legal right to do so, and that it will carry through with with a response. In between statements that Iranian officials have made, there is an eagerness for there to be a stop to the war in the region when it comes to Lebanon and the genocidal war against the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Do you think that based on this failure of an attack, that that will speed up those fronts in there for there to be a solution? Because we're seeing, again, the Israeli regime, for example, on Lebanon has said, we have killed or assassinated the Hezbollah officials. Therefore, it's the time now to come up with a solution. And we know that ceasefire talks are going to begin tomorrow. So we're seeing a trajectory for a political solution to these crises.
Well, definitely I hope so. But I don't think we should hold our breath, because Netanyahu and his cabinet and these extremists within the extreme occupying power are a bunch of loonies, and you know, they have failed over the last year to respond positively or indeed for their own benefit. It's been only for the benefit of Netanyahu to keep him out of jail. So leaving that caveat to one side, but what is really has happened over the last year, we have seen the unpopularity of the Zionist state occupying apartheid genocidal loonies being lost bit by bit. And then on the other side, the axis of resistance which I consider not just Yemen, Lebanon, Iran, Iraq, and so forth, but all those people in the West and everywhere else, which are going to demonstration and say enough is enough, that is being empowered. So yes, we are working towards a solution, but I really doubt that it will happen overnight.
Thank you very much. Masoud Shajareh, Chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, and thank you, Hossein Abughaiti, activist and political commentator from Sana'a. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight from Mikova Tagwe and the team. It's goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with verses 218 to 219 from the chapter Al-Baqarah from the Holy Quran, recited by Ali Parhizkar.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Innallazina amanu wallazina hajaru wajahadu fi sabilillah. Innallazina